Morning. It's good to see y'all again. All right, so this morning, as we talked about last week, and it seemed like no one was really excited about it, we're going to talk about the bleeding woman. I don't know why that y'all aren't excited about that. So we're going to talk today about the bleeding woman. And as Scales kind of said, the purpose of this is for you guys to meet each other, which I love. Even last week, I think I saw Anne, and he said that you guys are already calling each other to get together outside. And I was like, that is so fun. That is our goal. Y'all exchange numbers and get together outside of this. Y'all know when you're in such a big place, the best people to connect with are other new people. Because a lot of times people have been here for a while, kind of already have connections. So that's one of our heartbeats and goals. And what we study is, I just love studying Jesus. I love that he was a man like us. He skinned his knee. You know, he had the same issues that we do. And I love just stopping and looking at stories of how he encountered people. And no one who ever, while we study this, is no one who encounters Jesus really ever walks away the same. So it's kind of like some of these stories. I wish there's just this light story where Jesus met somebody and it was all happy and, you know, and there are wonderful stories. I mean, when he heals people and they walk away healed, and they can see, you know, they can hear. And yet a lot of the stories, when God encounters them, he meets them at their innermost being, you know, and them, that's our tender place. And so today we're going to see a gal who he really met her in her greatest need. So this is a Bible study like last week. There's a handout on your table. If everybody would grab one of the handouts with the scripture and the questions on it. I'm going to have you guys dive into the text. So this is, since it's a Bible study, you guys, I want you to read the story. And then there's some questions on the bottom that I would love for you guys to consider as you read the story. And so then we'll continue with it in a few minutes after you do that. All right, today is going to be a little more interactive than last week. So this is where I'm going to, and I'm okay with just sitting here and staring at you if you don't answer. But so I feel like it is neat to engage, not just for me to be teaching at you, but for actually us to engage over the scripture. So we're going to read a little text. I'll share a little, and then I'm going to ask some questions just about, hopefully, really around the questions that you guys were pondering on your sheets. So, okay, Luke 8:40. Now, when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, who was ruler of the synagogue, and falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. As Jesus went, the people pressed around him, and there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. All right, so Jesus has huge demands on his time. He has just healed a demon-possessed man. He comes back, and it said this whole crowd is waiting on him. And thinking about this, it's like he is not just like they're going to the stadium, waiting to get in the stadium. They're waiting for him. He is like the center of attention. And I was thinking this morning just about, I used to live in South Africa, and the time I could think of that I would think about this is one time I was in the bookstore, and guess who showed up at the bookstore? And you'll have a guess, because I live in South Africa. Nelson Mandela. Okay, so I'm in the bookstore in South Africa, and I see these guys, like Secret Service-looking little guys in suits coming, and they block the entrances to the bookstore, and here comes shuffling in his little floral, you know, shirt. Nelson, he was older at the time and sat down in a chair, and they brought him books. And, I mean, the experience of watching everybody, every culture, every race, it was like Jesus entered the building. And so this is this busy shopping mall, and everybody's just, the gal talking to me is like, my life is forever changed. She just, the idea of being near him. And he was walking out, and both, it was a two-level shopping mall. Now, he had bodyguards around him. So I think, you know, Jesus had no bodyguards. Sometimes Peter, if y'all notice, sometimes the disciples, when children are coming, they're like bodyguards, like, hey, people, stay away. You know, he's famous. And this story, they're not bodyguards. They're pressing in with him. But basically, he was walking along. It was silent. It was completely silent. Everybody just stood on the rails and stood by and watched this little man shuffle through. It was like Jesus, people were in awe that they were in the presence of Nelson Mandela. And I was thinking, that would be like, what would it be like seeing Jesus? Now, if Nelson Mandela could heal by touch or by sight, I mean, they would have been mobbed. It wouldn't have mattered that he had bodyguards. So Jesus is coming in, and there's this huge crowd waiting for him. And, you know, basically, Jesus is interrupted a lot. If you think about his ministry, one time he's in a house speaking, and they actually cut open the roof, you know, and they lower a man in to heal. He is talking to his disciples, walking around the road, and someone yells, "Hey, Jesus, tell my brother to divide his inheritance with me." He's like, "Okay, where'd that come from?" I'm sure he's like, "Okay, all right." Sometimes I think that when people ask things. He's sleeping. He's on a boat. He's sleeping. There is a storm. What happens? "Jesus, wake up. Don't you care?" Or, you know, there's Mark 1:35 talked about, he got up early in the morning and he went off to a solitary place and was praying there. And then the disciples come and find him and they're like, "Everybody's looking for you." So Jesus, what I love is Jesus doesn't look at people as interruptions. Like, he looks at them as divine appointments. So there's this whole crowd, and the words, there's three different Greek words in this text. It's pressing in around, almost crushed, and pressing against. So I've been to, if y'all have ever been to one of those New Year's Eve drops in New Orleans, I went to the Fleur-de-Lis drop, and it was like, you know, when you're just in bodies, just mashed together. That's what I'm picturing, because it's talking about they're pressing against, they're crushed, there's all these bodies. How many people wanted something from Jesus in this passage? So this is when I ask you a question. Who all wanted something from Jesus? Everybody. So all of them did. Were there some specific characters mentioned? Yeah. Jairus wanted something. He wanted his daughter healed. Jairus is this, he's this devout ruler of the synagogue. So he is about as prestigious as you get. So who else wants something from Jesus? The bleeding woman. There are many things about this bleeding woman to note. Her only identification, it's not her name. We never see her name. It's only that she is hemorrhaging, that she has a menstrual hemorrhage is all we know about her. It's kind of like your most shameful thing known throughout time. That's all you're known for. It's like, okay, the adulterer, the harlot, the murderer, the pornographer, whatever it is that you feel like could be a point of shame, it's like, that's how we know her, that she is the bleeding woman. One thing about the culture of the Bible, basically in this culture, Greek and Jewish culture at the time, women had no legal rights. They couldn't own property. They wouldn't even, if they saw a crime, they weren't allowed to testify in a court of law. They had no rights. It's so by the nature, she's a woman. And then she's bleeding. Now, how long is she bleeding for? 12 years. Can y'all imagine? Like, I am one day going, and I like almost bit my husband's head off 2 days ago. And I'm like, where's this coming from? And I'm like, yes. I mean, just hormones. And like, think about weakness. Bleeding for 12 years, she's got to have been weak. Think about without tampons or pads. I mean, back then they don't have that. Like the mess of it. She spent all her living. Now she's poor. It says that she spent everything she had going from doctor to doctor. And so now she's also poor. She's a woman. She's poor. She's probably single because she said that said she spent all her money. And, you know, if she'd been married, it would have talked about her husband's money. She's hopeless. I had a gallbladder thing a while back, but no one could diagnose it. I just was throwing up all night, and I was sick, and I went to the doctor, and they did every test. And there was like 2 months that I had no idea what was wrong. And it's like there's this hopelessness and there's this desperation. But I can't imagine for 12 years not being able to be healed. Not only is that, she's ceremonially unclean. So in this culture, not that that's not enough, it is if you were bleeding that you couldn't go into the temple. She couldn't go worship in the temple. She would have to announce herself when she's in public, unclean, unclean. She couldn't have been touched. If she sat on a couch, she's making it defiled. And so just to think, 12 years without human touch, just what isolation that she would have experienced. No hugs for her, no embraces. And think about in this culture as well, childbearing was a huge part of how they had significance and honor. If she's bleeding for 12 years, obviously that would keep that even from her. So this woman in her shoes, now how would you guys have felt? Hopefully I've given you a little picture of it. How would you have felt in her shoes? Desperate. Yeah, desperate.
That she's still hanging around.
Mm-hmm. She's still, there's still hope there.
Yeah.
She's hopeless, and yet she's still...
She's still seeking some sort of resolve.
Yeah.
She hasn't given up.
She hadn't given up. Yeah. There is some faith there. How else would you have felt? If you isolated. Yeah, alone. She couldn't go worship. She couldn't come into the house of God. She couldn't touch people. She had to announce herself as unclean. Isolated. Anything else? Those are good words. Exhausted? Yeah. I'm sure there she had anemia. I mean, I'm sure she just was so tired all the time. Frustrated. Abandoned. Yeah. You don't hear of anybody else in her story. She's on her own. It's not like the paralytic. Think about, they had friends carrying him to Jesus and opening. Hey, no, you don't read anybody else in the story. So it says she came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. So Jairus, how does he approach Jesus, the ruler of the synagogue? Yeah, he approaches him face to face. She approaches from this behind, secretly, because she doesn't want to be noticed. Her gender, uncleanness, and shame would have made it difficult for her to ask him for help. He's a holy and righteous man, and technically when she touched his garment, she rendered him unclean for the rest of the day. And yet she dared to do that. She had faith, desperation, and courage, and she took a risk. Think about it, though. Think about the crowds. If you're in this kind of crowd, was he the only person she touched? No. Can y'all imagine that? She's unclean, and she can't touch anybody, and she's supposed to call out unclean, unclean. She's in this mosh pit crowd, so she's touching everybody else. That's another reason we're going to talk about, why do you think she wanted to remain hidden? But, I mean, of course, if she says, I'm unclean, I mean, think about everybody else. Wait a minute. You just touched me. You touch me. And Jesus said, who was it that touched me? When all denied it, Peter said, Master, I love Peter. Don't y'all love Peter? Master, the crowd surround you and are pressing in on you. Basically, he's saying, who didn't touch you, Jesus? I can't believe you're asking who touched you. We all touched you. We are like a mosh pit here. So Peter is making the obvious. But Jesus said, someone touched me. For I perceive that power has gone out from me. And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. She knew it was wrong to touch him. So at first he asked, who touched me? And from looking at one of the other texts, she probably didn't say anything. But in another text, it says he continued to seek out. So it wasn't just like he said, who touched me? And what went on? He was stopped. He was waiting. He was not going to keep going until that person fessed it up. Kept looking around, looking penetratingly is what the Greek word was. So when she saw she couldn't escape notice, she came back fearing and trembling. She fell before him and told him the truth. And who else did she tell the truth? Everybody else. She declared it in front of the presence of everyone else. Many teachers in this day avoided touching women altogether just in case. Just in case they're on their period and they would be unclean. A rabbi would have rebuked her severely for touching him because she was unclean. But instead, he sought her out. Who is it that touched me? It makes me think of the Garden of Eden. You know that question? Does he know who touched him most likely? Yes, he's God. So Garden of Eden, y'all know that story. They were trying to hide and God pursues them. There's no sin, there's no death, there's no distant secrets between God and man, perfect unhindered love, nothing they needed to hide. But then after they sinned, then the eyes of both of them were open and they realized they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together, this is Adam and Eve, and made coverings for themselves. Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord God as he was walking in the garden in the cool of day, and they hid from the Lord God among the trees of the garden. But the Lord God called to the man, where are you? He answered, I heard you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. So after they broke the law, they were sinners, and they knew they needed to hide. Their shame was so big, not only did they hide from God behind the bushes, which, of course, he could see them, but what else did they hide from? Who else do they hide from? This is an easy one. Each other. So they're naked and unashamed. They're husband and wife. Technically, that should not have been an issue. And yet they're also putting on fig leaves. They're hiding from each other. When we see our sin, the natural thing to do is to hide it. They saw their sin and they couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle it. They had to hide. One of our deepest longings, I've read this before, is to be known completely by another and yet still loved perfectly. The worst fear for a woman is abandonment, which is means to be fully known and yet utterly rejected. I got married. I had the tiniest ear in the whole history of the universe. These things do not stay on. I got married 4 years ago, which is cute because I have to edit this every time and go, you know. And when I first gave this talk, I wasn't even dating, and so obviously illustrations change. But I got married 4 years ago, and throughout the dating process, I continued to be amazed at how someone could see me and still care for me. You know, when I showed my worst side, my imperfections, my sin to him, my selfishness, I thought he would run. You know, there's part of me that thought he would run, and he would continue to pursue me and care for me, to delight in me. He used to say, to love me, which I wrote this down back then. It's good to remember these things. To love me relentlessly, what he would say. You know, so there's a part of me that wanted to hide who I was from him because it's like he's going to reject me. But then deep down, isn't there a part of us that we want someone to see our sin, our weakness, all our junk, and them to still love us is like a bigger gift than to hide it. I deep down really want someone to see the real me, warts and all, and still love me. You know, and I'm still getting used to that. I still am like, you know, I still resist it. And it is just a sweet gift of the Lord. And it's a picture of Christ and our church that he would still pursue me. Now, he is imperfectly doing that. And yet it's still just this gift of we want to hide. And yet we want to be seen and loved and known. What do you want to hide? What issue is it that you can't imagine others or God accepting you if they saw it? You know, our thing is, I want to hide that I'm bleeding. He knows your deepest wounds, your deepest shame, and yet sent his son to cover your shame and loves you perfectly for who you are. He sees your shortcomings and moves towards you. Verses away. God says, where are you? You know, let me cover you. Let me remove your shame. Why did in the garden, why did God ask where Adam and Eve were? He knew where they were. Why did he ask for them? Why do y'all think he asked? Yeah. 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 Yeah, to make them admit it. You know, it's like when I'm a mommy and my 2-year-old does not hide things very well, you know? What it's that you've done, you know? Like, I know what she's done, but I want her to confess it. I want restored relationship. He's calling them out because he wants to restore that relationship. You know, this whole, it made me think of also of hiding and seek. I mean, we want to be found. You know, they're hiding, and yet I'm sure they want to deep down want to be found. My little girl is very cute at this stage because we'll say, where are you hiding? And she's like, behind the chair. Like, she tells us where she's hiding. And someday she will understand hide and seek, and then she tells us where to hide. Go hide behind that curtain. And then she really does act like she's surprised when she finds us. It's not good when we hide somewhere else because she can't find us. But, you know, it's like we want to be found, and he wants to restore that relationship. So she is trying to hide. He loves her too much. He loves a bleeding woman too much to let her hide. He invites her back. She's exposed, she's healed, and she's pursued. But I love that the best is yet to come, that Jesus pursues us relentlessly. So back to the story. And when the woman saw, come on. And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. So Jesus' response, it's not disdain. It's not scolding her. It's not rebuke. What does he say? Daughter. It is the only time in the New Testament that Jesus calls any woman this. The bleeding woman is the only person that Jesus addresses as daughter. What a sweet word. It may not be that she was any younger than him. You know, thinking about her bleeding for 12 years. He's in his early 30s. And yet, what a picture of him saying, "You're mine." He speaks as a father to a child, welcoming her into his family. The imagery of a father and daughter, it's a powerful one to me. I lost my dad over 25 years ago. And, you know, it was one of those wounds. He was my favorite person in the entire world. Kind of after that, he always delighted in me. I always knew he would always talk about, and I guess this is what dads do, how beautiful I was and competent. If I needed anything, Dad would do it. I remember one story, even I was sick. I went to University of Virginia. I was totally sick, and I had a friend flying into Richmond Airport, which is not that close. And I was so sick, I couldn't go pick her up. And so I called Dad. Dad's in Nashville. Dad's not there. "Here's my dilemma. I don't know what I'm going to do." He goes, "Your daddy's going to handle it. Don't worry about it." So I hung up the phone. I did not worry, because I knew if Dad said he got it, he got it. And so I was in this little residence dorm. And so I hear all this hubbub and go outside and look. And there's a stretch limo coming up with my friend in it. And my dad had sent her with a stretch limo. And that's what he needed to do to get my friend there. And that's, my dad was not perfect. He was actually under house arrest when he died. And yet I knew I was loved. I knew I was cared for. I mean, the idea of every time my car broke down, every time I had a bot for 20 years, in my lovely moment, I missed it. I felt that lack of a man looking at me and saying, "Daughter, I love you. I delight in you. I'm going to take care of you." Even when I walked down the aisle, I didn't have a father figure at that point. And I remember people asking, "Who's going to walk you down the aisle?" And I was like, there's nobody. And yet what's so sweet is God brought along in that season. I had father figures in the church all those years. But when I didn't, God brought along my husband. And so I actually walked down and met him halfway. He came and met me halfway. And just a sweet, but it's just, now it's fun to watch my husband with our daughter. He delights in her. She is wrapped. He's wrapped, I guess, around her finger. But it's just so sweet. She will get ready, and then she wants to go find Daddy. And she's like, "I'm not going to find Daddy for him to tell me how pretty I am," you know? And so it's just this delight. She'll look in the mirror, and she goes, "I'm so pretty. I look fantastic." So, I mean, I'm like, oh, it's so sweet. And I'm like, I'm not worrying about that, because she's a girl, and someday she's not going to look in the mirror and say, "I'm fantastic." I wish she would. Gosh, wouldn't it be sweet if for the rest of her life that she saw herself as her daddy saw her? She is delighted in it. And God is our ultimate father, and he looks at us and he delights in us. He said to her, "Daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well, saved you. Go in peace." That word peace means not just freedom from anxiety, which we think of, but it's the wholeness or completeness that comes from being in right relation to God. Be restored, be whole. You couldn't clean yourself up. You could not fix it. You spent 12 years and all your money going from place to place to fix it. And in one moment, I healed you. Like, isn't that cool? 12 years and just instantaneously. You didn't make me clean, I made you clean. Okay, what would she have missed out if Jesus had just let her go on her way? She would have been healed, let her go on her way, and didn't call her out. What would she have missed out on? Yeah. She would have missed out on engaging with Jesus and his blessing for what she did. She would have felt shame. She took something from him without him knowing.
Well, and he then publicly said, "You are well." So he declared to everyone there.
Yeah.
She was okay.
Yeah. Now she could be accepted in society. She could belong. Now she could go to the temple. Now she could have a family. Yeah, that's huge. She would have missed out on that. She would have had shame for the rest of her life. Those are wonderful things.
That's
good. That's good. That's like a teachable moment with everybody else. Hey, you don't just, I mean, I would have been touching him. From that moment, I'd be like, I have something, you know. But he's like, your faith. He's honoring her. This is something you did too. the fact you came to me and touched me, it was her faith that made the power go out of him. That's sweet.
Is there any correlation between the fact that she had that for 12 years and this other girl that was dying
12?
Was 12 years old?
I hadn't really thought of that. You never know. I mean, what to me, when I think about the story, being in the midst of it, can you imagine being that dad? Your daughter's dying, and you're important, and your daughter's dying, and you've said, Jesus, come with me, and Jesus has said, I'm going to come. But the Jesus stops. I would have been like, my daughter's dying, and you're stopping and engaging with this lady? So I feel like there is something of every person's important. You know, his timetable. I love that he engages her in the midst of something important. He's like, you are as important. But yeah, I hadn't really thought about the 12 years. I'm sure there could be. That's the same amount of time that she was alive. That's a long time.
Both that he was on his way to Jairus' job.
Mm-hmm.
And something about the fact that he was on his way, and as she went, as the bleeding woman went, she was healed. So there was that action.
Well, if she'd stayed at home and just hoped, nothing would have happened. Yeah, she had to seek him out, and he sought her out. I think he's the one that healed, you know, it wasn't her. But there is an action thing. She had to go. I love that we're just sitting here. And don't you love that? Just sitting with a text and just sitting in it for a minute and going and picturing yourself there. I feel like so many times I read scripture and be like, oh, yeah. Yeah, she's healed, you know. But to really sit and think about the importance of that and what they were experiencing, what Jairus was experiencing, what the disciples were experiencing. It's just sweet. She wants a cure of something, but Jesus desires a personal encounter with someone. You know, I long for you guys to hear God say to you, daughter, be restored, be whole. You know, we want this to be a place you could come to his garment and you could touch it and say, okay, what do I need from you? And I love that. I have a little storybook Bible I'm reading with my daughter, and so many people, the blind man, the guy who's calling out that wants to hear, you know, he'll ask, what do you want me to do for you? I love that Jesus doesn't just, he knows, but he calls out. What do we desire of him? We can't fix ourselves or heal ourselves or deal with our own sin. We are like the bleeding woman so many times trying to heal ourselves. We can't control our problems. He's ultimately the one who made her whole. From now on, her name has been changed. So I could call this talk the daughter talk, but then it would spoil my punchline. You know, so now she's not known as bleeding woman for all time. She's known as daughter of the king. He lets his schedule be interrupted. He has compassion. He attracts the least, the lost, the lonely, and the outcast. He touches others and allows himself, and he allows to touch them too. So there's a sermon illustration a couple of years ago, a guy named David McNeely, which all you newcomers wouldn't know him, and he was one of our pastors here. And right around the time I was giving this talk, one of the times, he was speaking in a sermon, and this illustration, I feel like, so much fits this story. And so I'm going to play that for you, and we'll wrap up.
Earlier this summer, I had the privilege of speaking at a retreat in Myrtle Beach, I think. Somewhere over there. I'd suffered for Jesus. It was terrible. Whole family went along. We got a condo to stay in. They asked us to hang out as a family, to play on the beach. We got a chance to hang out with all high school kids. My kids loved it. And then at night, I would be able to talk to them about a great topic. And on the second to last night, my son Davis comes into my room. I was just laying down. I was particularly sunburned on that particular day. As you see, my skin, I don't really tan. I just get multiple shades of red. And so recovering from that, and Davis walks in. He says, Dad, Emerson is locked in the bathroom, and he's crying. Locked himself in the bathroom, and he was just sobbing. I said, Buddy, I need you to open the door. And he opened the door, and when the door opened up, The stench from that bathroom was overwhelming. It was obvious he did not make it to the bathroom in time. And so what he had done is to take every single wet wipe that we had taken on the trip with us. And so there's an empty box of wet wipes. There's 40, 50 of them out around the floor. And he has done the best that he can to clean this up. But there is poop on the wall. It's on the shower curtain. It's on the tub. It's on the cabinet. It's on the mirror. It's on top of the toilet. It's underneath the toilet. It's over the door, the handle. Everywhere you can think of, there is this mess that he has made. And he's done his best to try to clean it up. And all he's done is smear it all throughout the bathroom. And there he is, sobbing. And he's sobbing because his other brothers had seen it, and they were just laughing. And he was so filled with shame at this moment. And so what did I do as a dad? I looked at him and said, "You idiot! You moron! I cannot believe you did." Did I do that? I entered into his mess with him. And then I picked him up, becoming dirty myself. And I put him inside of the tub, and I turned the shower on, and I washed him. I cleansed him, and I made sure that he was different from when he started there. And then I took my white towel, and I wrapped it around my son. I pulled him out of that situation, put him into the hall. And while I had him there in my arms, I said, "Son, I want you to know I'm very proud that you tried to clean this up. But buddy, this is a mess that only Dad can clean up." And then I went about cleaning it up. You cannot deal with your guilt and your shame on your own. So look up. And you'll hear him say, "I got it."
What a picture. You cannot deal with your guilt and your shame on your own, to look up. You know, our biggest thing, she tried to be heal herself. Our biggest thing is to be healed of sin. I love the gospel. We can't. It is like taking a shower to cure cancer. We can't, but he can. In a moment, he can heal us. From all time, her name has been changed. What she would remember by from Bleeding Woman, "I am unclean. I am outcast. I am unworthy. I am alone. I am rejected. I am ashamed. I am broken. I am impoverished. I am isolated. To now, I am God's daughter. I am clean. I'm adopted. I'm worthy. I'm accepted. I'm forgiven. I'm healed. I'm restored. I'm wanted." Which I love that word. Did she ever feel wanted? What would you want to touch Jesus' garment and receive? Like David with his son. And I love that. Jesus didn't rebuke her. He's not going to rebuke you for being messy. He's not going to rebuke you for needing him. He desires with open arms to just restore us.